Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is April 24th, and this is another repost. This is another supplemental show, and really an optional show, and I'll tell you why. We, as you can tell from the title, we spend almost all of this show talking about the incident in Boston and the fallout in Massachusetts and around the country. And I know there's no shortage of discussion or theory or debate about the bombing at the Boston Marathon. So please feel free to move on to the next show. But it's rare that I get the opportunity to work with Gardner. I always enjoy it. And I know there's other people who do as well. So I thought I would throw it up here. Gardner and I actually had a conversation about maybe working together a little more frequently. This audio is taken almost directly from his podcast. I did very, very little editing, so it is a live show format. I hope that's okay. I always enjoy his productions. I think he does a really good job. Oh, and if you haven't done so yet, go to YouTube, and or you can just go to schoolsexproject.com and check out the new video, Why Libertarianism is So Dangerous. It did very well on its first day. It had about 15,000 views. It's up around 17,000 now. And that's awesome. I'm really excited about that. Despite the fact that it got banned in almost every country in the world for a copyright infringement. Somebody wrote to me in New Zealand and said they couldn't see it. I'm sorry about that. There does appear to be a solution. A listener named Evan told me about a program called Tunnel Bear. You can access that through tunnelbear.com, and this should allow you to view restricted content in any country. It looks pretty well reviewed and safe. You install the program and you put in the country where the content originated, which is the United States of America. Please let me know if that works. That would be great. That would be a terrific workaround. If it doesn't, I can work on uploading a new version of that video with different music. Okay, here's me and Gardner. I hope you enjoy this. Thanks.
Greetings, Gardner Goldsmith here with you from Liberty Conspiracy Audios and LibertyConspiracy.com, the website. With a quick intro, as we hear music from the best album by The Fix, this is off of Shutter Room, it's the song The String. Opens what I think is one of my favorite podcasts thus far this year, a conversation with the man behind the School Sucks Project, Brett Benaud, as we look at what happened in Boston, the Boston bombings, and what happened afterwards, the reaction to the police response to it, and we offer our libertarian perspectives. I hope you'll like it. I really like this show, and it is the first of two parts that I really like, because the next one that's coming out, and I would love to get it out tonight, but I won't be able to, will feature our friend Tyron Price. And Ty talked to us via Skype from his home state. I'm looking forward to talking to you about that in the next intro. Right now, a little more music and our conversation with Brett. Be seeing you. We return to Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. It's LRN.FM. Thanks very much for being part of the conspiracy. As we often say, there aren't that many people who believe in leaving their neighbors alone, and we are a real tiny minority out there. We're trying to expand the parameters of analysis of freedom, of the historical understanding of the people who helped push for freedom through the centuries, and try to continue in their great footsteps. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thanks very much for joining us. I hope you'll go to LibertyConspiracy.com and see some of the stories that are posted there, some of the breaking news stories, some of the things that people have posted in our forum. You can take our poll, and you can check out the audios that are posted right in the central player there as well. You can contact me via Skype, perhaps a little bit later, and phone 603-835-3360. Skype, it's usually Gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R, dot Goldsmith on Skype, but there's a special reason why I have not opened up the Skype line to you yet, and that is because we're going to be welcoming a very special guest very shortly. Real quick, going to give you a couple of the pieces of information that are out there in the news right now. You might have heard about this, that out of Canada, there have been two arrested in Canada that they have been alleged to plan to have been planning an attack on a train that would have been headed to Toronto. This out of Ottawa, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police said they had arrested two men today who had been planning to derail a passenger train. They offered few details on the plot or their evidence at a news conference in Toronto called to announce the arrests. They said that the FBI was involved with this, and they declined to explain whether or not the link to any link to Al-Qaeda had been made. They said that Al-Qaeda elements living in Iran were involved, and they didn't say whether there was any evidence that the government of Iran had sponsored it. One man is 30, the other man is 35. One other very brief note for you. There is new information about existing home sales dropping in the month of March, and that is not so good for the economy. And we'll talk about that some other time when we go into economics. Actually, economics and politics are unfortunately linked, and it all has to do with your freedom. So if you think that anytime we're straying away from your freedoms, it all has to do with your freedoms. Also, the internet sales tax is being pushed huge right now. Harry Reid, folks at Walmart, the big corporations are very much in favor of this. They want to pass this very soon, and we'll see what happens on that. We'll talk about that when we can. And if you didn't see it last week, as we have noted over at the Liberty Conspiracy website, you'll be able to see it. CISPA has moved out of one house of the Congress, and if people don't stand against it, it could pass. It's the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. It was designed to get around the Fourth Amendment and to give private corporations the power to collect your private data, your private correspondences, and hand it to the government without any possibility of you getting any sort of legal recourse against them. And it incentivizes them financially because it would also indemnify them within the federal court system. It would block any personal lawsuits that you could bring against them for financial reasons, and they could sell your data and make money off it. So those are a few of the things that we're looking at. You can see the Liberty Conspiracy website for more information. Right now, I want to welcome, talking to us via that magic technology called Skype, the man behind the School Sucks Project, a man that I hope I mentioned on Facebook and Twitter that I respect as one of the top guys in the Liberty movement today. He's Brett Vinod. Brett, thanks for joining me on the program. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Gardner. It's great to be on again.
Hey, it's great to have you here. And you are in the midst of something which is sort of breaking today. We'll tell people about the latest release that you've allowed out there into the streams of the internet as we sort of come off of the incredible chaos and fear and panic and state response and state mistakes of the bombings in Boston. You had been working on something, and you released it today. You said, you know what, it's going to go out today. And I'm very impressed, folks. It's a terrific, terrific video. You'll find it linked at places like my Facebook page and so on. And it's about the dangers of libertarianism. Brett, great job, and thanks for joining the program.
Thanks. Yeah, I was getting ready to release that video last Monday, and it's kind of a tricky, trolly type of video that kind of leads people down a path that, you know, if you're not on your toes, it might take you someplace other than where you think it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And it was based on an old episode of the podcast that I recorded years ago. It was something that people had asked me to turn into a video. I had it all uploaded to YouTube last Monday, and then the news came out of Boston, and because of the, you know, somewhat maybe disturbing and graphic nature of the video, I decided that it was insensitive to release it in the midst of everything that happened last week. But I was, you know, I have to say, I was kind of disappointed and at times even a little bit disgusted with the amount of blind nationalism and really like embrace of more steps towards a police state that I saw in the last week, that my attitude and my concern for sensitivity of others kind of diminished, and my attitude became I think I'm going to put this out as a counter to what I'm seeing, you know, on Facebook and on Twitter and on Reddit and on Imgur. And this is kind of some counter programming.
Well, you perfectly frame it, and I appreciate the way you've explained your thought processes and your feelings about it, Brett, because I had the same sorts of feelings. And in bringing you on the program and deciding to speak on the program and turning these programs into podcasts, I at a certain point said to myself, all right, how do I address my frustrations? How do I address what I'm seeing, which seems to be so counter to what so many other people are feeling and seeing and saying about what the police did, what the state did to protect people, and the way I see it. And I thought, you know, this is an excellent way to start our program and our conversation tonight. And to the listeners out there and the folks listening later on podcasts, I'm really comfortable bringing Brett in and him mentioning this right off the bat, because this is precisely where I hoped to start the program. This can be a program about timely issues that are happening today, or it can be a cleanup program and or to include some of our thoughts on things. And I had the same reaction, Brett, so let's begin with that, if we can, to discuss what, because you and I haven't really been able to speak about the information that we gathered or the opinions that we had about the bombing itself and then what happened afterwards. You just stated exactly the way I felt about what happened afterwards. So you can start there, you can start with the bombing, but I'd love to get your feel of how your opinions really started to evolve as you watched people starting to embrace the destruction of the Fourth Amendment, the police state mentality and attitude of the Boston police, the state police, the National Guard, New Hampshire police that went down. What was your, if you could give us a couple ideas, and then we'll probably go to our commercials, but I'd love to get a little more of your thoughts about this.
Well, you know, initially I made a post and I shared one article, the only thing I said during the week about what had happened in Boston, that my news feed on Facebook over the course of the last week was pretty gross for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just put up this article, Why Control is the Wrong Response to the Deadly Attacks. And when I say pretty gross, and that article came from Reason.com, and maybe we can get into that later, but yeah. I was initially kind of disappointed in a lot of the friends that I have that I consider to be like-minded who, like, I really just wish there would be, like, a 48-hour moratorium on the memes.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I wish that and I guess this is a little different than these events have been in the past because, you know, I was pretty much raised in New Hampshire. I know people always talk about having a city. Boston would be my city the same way New York or Philadelphia is other people's city.
Right.
I really grew up there. I have family there. I knew people who were running in the race. When you hear a bomb goes off in Boston and you live in New Hampshire, for those of you who are in other people, other places in the country, you know, that's really close. That's almost like a hometown. So I don't have any special sort of collectivistic attachment to Boston anymore.
I'll tell you what, Brett, hold that thought.
That's
a perfect place to pause. We'll hear from some of our sponsors. We'll come back with Brett's feelings about this, very similar to mine, include some new news stories about this, and get your thoughts. Liberty Conspiracy Radio.
Hey, this is Vince McCann. Wow, look, I gotta talk fast because this headset's killing me. A long time ago, politicians discovered the most amazing cleaning product, the Con Wow. Just look at all the abuse this Con Wow can take. You can use it to clean up spills, clean cars, and look how it absorbs this blood and saliva from a detainee held by the CIA. Con Wow can do it all. Be wrung out and used again any way the government wants. It wasn't designed this way, but politicians are so inventive, this super malleable document can be used for anything. Healthcare? Con Wow. Bailouts? Con Wow. Look, you can even pick up urine spilled from this government-funded artwork. Can an ordinary constitution do this? No way. Con Wow does it all. Listen, you gotta call now, got it? Because the Con Wow might not be available much longer. Call right away and we'll even give you this great set of media blinders. They're perfect for the beach, ball game, or to make yourself and the populace oblivious to government crimes. It's all yours for just $19.95. $19.95. You gotta call now. NSA wiretappers are standing by.
pre-match.
Good to be back. Thank you very much for joining me, Gardner Goldsmith, and my co-host for this evening, Brett from the School Sucks Project. I hope you'll check out the School Sucks Project and the videos. Look it up, School Sucks Project on YouTube. You'll see the latest one, which is about the dangers of libertarianism. In fact, it's called Why Libertarianism is So Dangerous. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Welcome back. It's Liberty Conspiracy Radio. You can also visit our website, libertyconspiracy.com. Brett, thanks for sticking around. Appreciate it, and thanks for being a co-pilot here, my friend.
My pleasure. This bumper music brings back fond memories of filling in as a host for you around this time last year.
Oh, that's right, when I had pneumonia.
Yeah?
Yeah, I know. It's like, yeah, that was a really weird month and a half, man. That was not good. Thank you. Thank you so much. You guys did a great job. That was really, really cool, man.
Yeah, our pleasure. It was great.
Yeah, it was really cool. And and I do mean it, you know, it's an interesting sort of thing when you're, you know, we all do little libertarian-type projects here in the Free State, or many of us do anyway, and when you see somebody who does stuff, you know, I'll be listening to your podcast or whatever in my car, and I have memories, you know, indelibly imprinted in my mind of listening to certain things that you've done, and it's great to have you here on the program because, you know, obviously we're friends and everything, but you do good work. And, folks, we've been discussing... without any specific necessary order, but some in a way falling into a certain type of order here with Brett, on our assessment of, and we don't want to sound like, you know, we're on some sort of high and mighty hill, but as libertarians, from our gut, from our minds, how do we look at this event in Boston and the reactions to it and our own reactions to them without getting too messy with it. And Brett mentioned just before we headed to our commercials that, you know, the city of Boston, having grown up in New Hampshire, it's his sort of city. It's his close by city. Same thing with me, Brett, you know. Yeah, I went to college there, you know. I walked those streets, and I said when I started the podcast that night, or the broadcast that night, I had Ferb on from the Freedom Book Club, and I said, look, you know, I can't say that I identify with the city. I can't put my own character in the city. I'm not going to shake my fist and say, yes, Boston, yes. But I have an affinity for it. I appreciate it. I appreciate the things that so many of the people have done there, just like in so many other cities, helping each other out, making great music, doing things that give it a sort of character and a flavor that's different, and carrying on traditions. And, you know, it's things that people do in every city. But I happen to have been close to this city, and you know, you see this sort of thing, you say, oh, there's poor people. But by the same token, it's incumbent on us to watch these things and to say, wait a minute, this is alarming stuff. So, you know, I looked at this and I said to myself, I heard some libertarians, as I mentioned to you off the air, Brett, I heard some libertarians saying, well, you know, the reaction that people are having here, how come they're not having the same reaction to the people who were killed in Afghanistan by drones? You know, there were 10 kids killed, and we've, you know about it, I know about it, many libertarians know about it, and we've spoken about it, raised the alarm, said this isn't right what the U.S. government is doing. But this person was saying, I just don't think he had the right assessment of it. You know, I said, look, I think it's a sociological and psychological phenomenon that people identify with cities where they might have visited, they might know friends, it's closer, they see it in the news. They don't know the people in Afghanistan. So
right.
I can't blame people for not paying as much attention to it, which is really sad. You know, it's a troubling thing, the way the government works when it goes and kills people abroad. And the further away you are, the less attention you're gonna bring to it. By the same token, I find it extremely troubling, the sociological nature. I don't know how we can avoid this sort of Klan mentality that I have seen arise here, which has, I think, included an embrasure of the police state as, well, it's ours. Our police state was the one that shut down the roads. Hooray. You know, it's weird.
Yeah, well, you know, on the first point, too, I mean, my frustration was, you know, when you're creating memes or finding memes that are sort of clever or you think are witty and you're putting them up to Facebook,
yeah,
in the middle of a developing tragedy, I mean, I found myself for the first time, you know, checking to see if people that I knew, especially people who were in the race, which was just a couple of people, it wasn't a lot of people, but does anybody I know die or get seriously injured in this event, and to already start seeing memes pop up is kind of frustrating, like gloating memes.
It's kind of
a frustrating thing. And I do see that as the distance from Boston grows, and I think that a lot of people who are liberty-minded elsewhere in the country or the world, you know, they might hear two guys like you and me, you know, familiar where we're coming from philosophically, talking about this affinity for Boston. It's like, wait a minute, I thought Boston was like a socialist, traffic-ridden street maze,
yeah,
you know? But there's more to the city than that. And, you know, I grew up a big sports fan, too, which I think actually contributes to the environment and the culture of the city very much. But, yeah, I think another thing that is unique about Massachusetts is Massachusetts generally, it's kind of the panic capital of the world. And the government is very anxious to be the government and to do government-y things.
Yeah.
So the situation, I think, was very much amplified by the statist culture that's in Massachusetts in that bureaucracy. So like I was joking with my mother just the day before this happened last Monday. We were having dinner on Sunday and I was talking about how I was just down in the Boston area and it started to rain and I was worried that Deval Patrick, the governor, was going to declare a state of emergency and I was going to get arrested for driving in the rain, which is an exaggeration, but it was based on a reality of doing a car ban.
Yes.
Just like 6 weeks prior. Mm-hmm. So it's a very government-y kind of place.
Yes.
And I think what people were seeing on the streets, and really, you know, some of the best footage of especially what happened in Watertown with the police sweep that we were talking about earlier, most of the more jarring and disturbing images were not shown in the mainstream media, but were made available through, you know, citizen, or not that word, ordinary people, journalists.
Yes.
who were sharing those photos. So yeah, I mean, I my disdain quickly moved on to the worship of the police state tactics that were used, and the gratitude that people seem to express for that. Now, of course, Massachusetts is a good place for that to happen, but
sure.
it was upset. It was a little bit disturbing.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting the way you mentioned the roads and so on. The roads are as Byzantine as the bureaucratic mess that the government has made. It's almost as if, you know, the roads grew up out of the cow pastures, and a lot of the government policies seem to have grown out of what the cows have left behind as well, you know?
Yeah.
And I love the way you mentioned that a little bit earlier, because that's exactly right. And you mentioned Deval Patrick, the shutting down of the car emergency that he called when there was a snowstorm, and he called... He stated that no one should be on the roads, and yet by the time he did it, there was still plenty of clear roads out in portions of Massachusetts, and people couldn't have made it home without being fined in other areas. We'll return, everybody. Brett Vinat with me, Gardner Goldsmith, Liberty Conspiracy Radio.
During its time in office, Gardner Goldsmith's become known as a man who gets things done. The state employees union wants more money, Gardner Goldsmith gets it done. The teachers union wants more money, Gardner Goldsmith gets it done. Fast, he walks down hallways with lackeys in suits. He wears hard hats with blue-collar workers. Gardner Goldsmith gets kids to raise hands in stage classroom settings. When America needed a vaccine for smallpox, Gardner Goldsmith got it done. When Homeland Security needed a way to peep into people's underwear, Gardner Goldsmith got it done. Human Genome Project, Goldsmith. Harry Potter 6, done. Clash Reunion Show, done. Cure for Cancer, done. Zombie Cobain with Nirvana, done. Celine Dion with Motorhead, done. Mars Mission, done. Mario Kart, done. Done. Gardner Goldsmith gets so much done, we have to layer words on top of each other to show how fast he works. Well, Goldsmith, get it done!
I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and I'm done.
Hey, all you listeners out there at Liberty Conspiracy Radio, I want to give you a little tip of advice here. Hey, if you get the opportunity, check out the website of one of my friends, a sponsor of the program, the Freedom Book Club. It's thefreedombookclub.com, freedombookclub.com. Ferb, the guy who created it, has put together a way that you can suggest books that might be interesting to people who are interested in the principles of freedom, free market economics, philosophy, history, the sovereignty of the individual. FreedomBookClub.com. Now, when you go there, you can suggest a book of the month. You can help vote on the book of the month. You can see other people's suggestions, and you can buy the books right there. All the proceeds that they get that are residuals from their connection to Amazon are bundled and put together, 100% are put together and given in a check each year to the Liberty Scholarship Fund, which helps get kids out of government school. So remember, freedombookclub.com. It's a great website. I really like it, and I've discovered great books there. And talking about getting kids out of government schools, we're right now speaking with the man, the creator and the man behind the School Sucks Project, and his name is Brett Vinaut. Brett, thank you for being my co-pilot, my friend.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Folks, we're in the midst of a conversation right now, which, you know, out of necessity for the advertisers who support us, will be broken up occasionally. But we'd like to continue in a certain vein here without too much of a recap, without too much pause, a conversation between me and Brett. And I really appreciate Brett coming on because he handles so many facets of the liberty mindset, of the individual principles of free market voluntarism that I think are often missed. And we're talking about our assessment, our reactions to the actions of the state, the mistakes the state made, and then the actions of the state after the Boston Marathon bombings. And in particular, right now I want to talk about our feelings, our assessment of the way that the people in the area have responded and people outside of the area have responded to this incredible, flagrant display of anti-constitutionalism, movements of the growth of the police state. And Brett, we talked about the Klan mentality before.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to start there, you want to start with identifying with the city or anywhere else you want to go, your thoughts as you saw people starting to rally, and at what point did you really start to notice this and become very alarmed?
Well, I think it really came down to last Friday when the police were doing the sweep of Watertown, and you know, we actually have a friend who's up here in New Hampshire who happened to be down there, taking video, posting photographs, and other people were doing the same. And I thought the visuals and the idea like kind of wondering, since I became aware of these things many, many years ago, the direction, the trajectory of the state post 9/11, like how are things going to go to the next step? And something like Newtown happens or something like this happens and you say, is this the next step? How will this be used?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a little bit of nervously about, you know, is this the event that they use? And, you know, I do remember what it was like to, to experience 9/11 with a much less knowledge and perspective. I was about 24. I was very, very scared. And, I can call back to that when something like this happens. And even though the impulse is to be negative and be like, oh, look at these stupids. They don't even know what they're cheering for. They don't know what's going on. They're so blind. They're so asleep. To try and be a little bit more empathetic to that situation for some of the reasons that we've already discussed.
Yeah.
But I think there's two elements to this. And of course, now I'm a very amateur psychologist / sociologist / anthropologist, but okay. I have tried to spend more time, taking a look at human needs and the actions that people take to try and meet those needs. So I think when an event like this happens, especially one that you're very close to, proximity, physical proximity wise,
yeah.
There's a deep and often overwhelming sense of insecurity.
Yes.
And New York was close enough on 9/11, and I was working in Western Massachusetts and like thinking, gosh, those planes flew right over me, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there's a real sense of insecurity that I think, and people, when they feel that, really, maybe even just speaking from my own experience, they have a need for belonging, for understanding, for some kind of community. And I think that that collectivistic drive, nationalism, patriotism, I love my city, our city united, our city stands up together, that kind of rhetoric provides that in a time of great emotional insecurity. People want that sense of belonging.
Yeah.
And people tend to band together. I think it could be more primal, going all the way back to the days of, early civilization or even, more tribal or hunter-gatherer times when a tribe perceived a crisis, they gravitated kind of to the feet of the strongest, mm-hmm. and said, lead us, protect us. And we are still, as the idea of being the strongest, being the rock, most people still look to the state, to the police, to the military, to be that, because they have all of this mythology that they've learned at a very young age. So, I remember when 9/11 happened, somebody saying, well, thank God that George Bush's father was also the president, and he's right there and he can help him. And just that kind of that paternalism.
Yeah.
That was like a relief for people. I think that's something very instinctive and very primal.
You know, I was going to say, isn't that interesting, Brett, because when you look at the statist mentality, which is the exact opposite, it's complete obverse of the individualist mentality, you will see, for example, traditional conservatives say, well, whatever happened to federalism? Well, federalism has been wiped out because many of the people who are statists will use arguments such as, well, the states or the towns just can't do it by themselves. And that goes all the way down to the individual level. They say, well, the individual just can't do it by themselves. Of course, there's a tautology in there, which is that if the individual can't do it by himself through free association with other people, how is it possible that he can vote to have other people who can't do it by themselves then do it for everybody, this sort mm-hmm. of thing. But there is this sort of attitude that seems it is always generally trending away from the individual, because they say you just can't do it yourself. Look towards this larger group,
And then that, when that one can't do it, look towards this larger group. And when that one can't do it, look towards this larger group. All the time, of course, never addressing Hayek's information problem, which is the further you get from a problem, the less ability you have to really address the needs of that problem. And, of course, the economic problems, which is that it removes the real mechanism of the price, which people need to have and make their own decisions on their own valuations. And it's fascinating to me because this is not only an economic problem, it's an economic psychological, or it seems at least anthropological or sociological problem that you see. These people trending towards, and people at least being tempted to be brought in by rhetoric to trend towards the central authority.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the drive for togetherness is separate but very related to that.
Yes.
Kind of reminds me when Ronald Reagan was president. I remember this as like a little kid.
Yeah.
And because it was like a startling statement. He said, if aliens invaded the planet, the United States and the Soviet Union, towards which at the time the United States, there was quite a bit of antagonism between the two nations.
Yeah.
We would be brothers in arms. In this greater battle.
Right.
So, I remember being like 10 and hearing that and being like, oh, wow, okay. But that pretty much connects to that idea of, people will gravitate together to have that sense of security. I think that is very, very natural.
Absolutely. We're coming up to some commercials. We're going to hear from these folks. We'll be back. Brett will return. I will return. Liberty Conspiracy Radio. We continue at Liberty Conspiracy Radio. It's the Liberty Radio Network. I hope you'll check out LRN.FM if you listen to us after the fact on a podcast, on any of the Liberty Conspiracy podcasts. Those are available at Podomatic, which is our host website, and at LibertyConspiracy.com, and also at iTunes. You can download them at iTunes and at Podomatic. Just look up Liberty Conspiracy. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and my co-host, why don't you tell everybody who you are, my friends?
My name is Brett Vanott, and I am the creator of School Sucks Project and the host of School Sucks Podcast and the School Sucks Live Show, which is on No, it's not on LRN. Sorry, it's on Ustream. It's schoolsucksproject.com/live every Thursday at 6:30.
Every Thursday at 6:30. And if you haven't seen it, folks, you should check it out. They've got a great camera set up. The studio is great, and they're really, really funny and also very insightful. So, I can't. That's about the end of my compliments. Sorry, Brett. Thanks for joining me. See you later. our conversation with Brett Vanott continues, talking about our reactions, and it's sort of a ranging discussion, but not necessarily. We do have a certain direction on this, and we were talking about the way that government officials tell you they're going to protect you, and yet they don't. And yet the folks in a certain area get very panicked. They feel a certain identity. These things come together, whether it's a Klan mentality, whether it's regionalism, whether it's whatever, who knows, whether it's nationalism, patriotism. There is this trend. And the question is, we often see quotes from people like Hillary Clinton, never waste a good crisis. And I think it was Ari Fleischer did the same thing one time. I think it was Ari Fleischer said something to the effect of never let a good crisis go to waste.
Rahm Emanuel.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Rahm. It was his brother who is very interested in making sure that there are death panels in the healthcare proposal, because certain people have had enough life experience, and they should just be allowed to go. But I was fascinated by this sort of thing, Brett, because whether it is intentional that they create the crisis, as some conspiracy theorists might think, mm-hmm. or it is such that the crises occur, whether or not it's a response to government policies like the ones in the Middle East, as we might say in many cases the motivations seem to be, whether it's something else, the politicians respond to it, and they want, whether it's intentional that they know it's a crisis, and in a Machiavellian way they are going in and saying, yes, follow us, we will do it, whether or not their intentions are honest and or they, it's just the general trend. So if it's intentional or if it's unintentional, we know that government trends in this way to no longer allow the individual to rely on himself and to have people in some way identify with the central authorities and to say, yes, you will be our salvation. You will be the ones we trust. And so if we can pick up from there, maybe think about this within the context of any other things you'd like to discuss, other stories you'd like to bring up, or what you saw with these people chanting Boston, 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 USA, 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 or other ways that the government either intentionally takes advantage of these things or just trends in that direction. It'd be fascinating.
Well, yeah, another thing, too, about when you chanted Boston, it reminded me of this, because chants remind me of sporting events.
Yes.
Or they also remind me of people who really don't have very good arguments for political things.
Mm,
like
yes.
We saw a lot of in Wisconsin during that whole teachers union flare-up a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, a lot of my affinity towards the city was shaped when I was a younger man, and I was a big sports fan, especially of the Red Sox. And, Boston is really a sports city like no other. I know in Montreal they love the Canadiens, and in New York they love the Yankees. But, I mean, Boston's loyalty to the Celtics and the Red Sox and even the Bruins, which is a hockey team. Some people might not even know they still have professional hockey, but people love these teams, and you know, professional sports are very collectivistic. And in fact, it's one of the few places where I still catch myself saying "we."
Yes.
For a group of people that I am absolutely not a part of. In fact, a group of people whose existence has only ever cost me money.
I know. Yeah? You know, it's fascinating because you have we won, but when the team loses, it's they lost.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
I love that. I like, oh man, they really screwed up in the seventh inning, but in the ninth inning we won.
It's true. That is true. But I think just that kind of sports culture in Boston lends itself to that collectivistic display, the parades, the flag waving, the chants that we saw after they captured the second terror suspect last Friday. The other thing too that I think this kind of relates to is that society is generally pretty exclusionary, right? Like you can't go and work wherever you want to work. You can't go and hang out wherever you want to hang out. You can't be friends with whoever you want with. You can't have sex with whoever you want to have sex with. And, I think there's a lot of longing for that belonging. And this is like a way of providing people that belonging that's very easy, right? Like all you need is some kind of a tragedy, and everybody is allowed open arms. You know, everybody is allowed to come in, and I think people jump at that opportunity. And I think that also relates to some of the reasons, the emotional and maybe even primal hardwired reasons that I described before. But I think there's people have an awareness, even if it's subtle at times, of the exclusionary nature of a lot of elements of society. So when there is that opportunity, an easy opportunity for that real sense of belonging, and let's put our arms around each other and wave flags and chant Boston together. Sports provides that, but nationalism provides that too.
Wow, that's very, very well stated and astute. And you know, Brett, folks, we were discussing this off the air, and I just wanted to make sure that I brought it up. I was going to open up the segment with it, and it completely slipped my mind, so I want to go back to it because it now has a new fold to it because of what you mentioned, Brett. I was thinking about the identification of the we, and I mentioned in a podcast one time I called it the royal we because in the ancient feudal days, the king or queen, like the king of France, the classic line is "La tête c'est moi," I am the state, I believe is the translation. And it was understood that they would call themselves we, as in they represented the state, the nation of that nation state. So we proclaim this, and that's the way they would refer to themselves, as we. And they didn't refer to themselves as I. It was understood back then that there was a line of demarcation between the feudal lords and the kings and the people in the blood ties, and the serfs and the people who lived on the land and were somehow a different class. And America was supposed to be a classless nation. Now, through politics and political machinations, we're constantly reminded of different classes and all these different types of things. And what gets me is now, in the United States, supposedly the state is us. And yet, I don't have any control over it. You don't have any control over it. The royal we has become all of us, which, as I mentioned, is one of the reasons why the terrorists that have attacked the United States, I believe, attack civilians, because the civilians, they've bought into the terrorists have bought into the same canard that many of the civilians have bought into, which is that the government is ours. It's the great Lincolnian idea of by the people, of the people, for the people, right? And so this is interesting to me, because even when this is fascinating, as you were talking about this, I thought, gee, you know, if it could be revealed that the police had completely screwed up, right, which they did. I mean, they went down that route an hour before with bomb sniffing dogs. They clear the whole place out. They still couldn't stop these kids, and they're not going to be able to stop future terrorist attacks if people really want to carry these things out and they're willing to die for it and they don't care whether they get captured. So my thoughts are, it's interesting to think that even now, when the state screws up because of a violent attack on something that is so iconic, a race in the city, something like that, people still rally around the state. And that's extremely troubling to me. And I wonder if they had not caught up with this character, these two characters in the end, if it were really shown, like if they had never caught these guys, would people's opinions of the police have been sort of like we see the Boston Red Sox fans? Well, they screwed up before the race, and they screwed up after the race. But now it's, well, we caught the bad guys.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we've got another. We've got top of the hour coming up. I sort of went on a little long there. I'm sorry, Brett. It's
no problem.
Okay, great. Brett Vinat will be with us again in the next hour. I'll return. Remember, School Sucks Project. I will return from Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Bringing it up a notch for hour number two of Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM, libertyconspiracy.com, because freedom is out of fashion nowadays. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thanks for being part of the conspiracy. Obviously, at this time, I would tell you about how to get in touch with me on Skype. It's GARDNER.Goldsmith on Skype, where I would give you the phone number, 603-835-3360. But right now, I want to continue in the direction we've been traveling with my guest. He is none other than, why don't you introduce yourself, as they often do on Free Talk Live, my friend?
Brett.
Of
oh, that's how they do it on Free Talk Live.
Oh, I know, that's right. You only have to do, you have to give the first name, and you don't give the last name. I always love that. Yeah,
I'm Brett Vinat. I'm from the School Sucks Project.
All right, and folks, I hope you'll visit the School Sucks Project website, and there from there you can branch out and see all sorts of cool stuff. And I really hope, as just to inject something here, I really hope you'll go on YouTube like right away and look for the latest video from Brett. And it's a terrific video. It's the School Sucks Project, and it's derived from, I think, one of the podcasts that has probably influenced a lot of people over the years. I think it was like within the, it was number 41 or something like that, if I remember the video. Why Libertarianism is So Dangerous is the new video. Look it up, School Sucks Project on YouTube, and add some more views to it. It's already getting around. Lou Rockwell tweeted about it a little bit earlier, about 2 hours ago.
What? And he did?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. Absolutely. I replied to Lou. I said, this is great. Good job. So, yeah, it's getting around, man. You probably have a couple hundred more viewers just in the past hour and a half or so. So it's going viral, baby. So, Brett, thanks for joining us. And for you who might be just tuning in or maybe you're listening on your podcast, and thank you very much for finding us and thinking about freedom. And I hope you really will check out the School Sucks Project show. It's great. And I want to continue our conversation, everybody, about the Boston Marathon bombings and the resultant the reaction of the police state to their own failure and to the dangerous people, the allegedly dangerous people who were traveling their streets, the way that the Constitution was completely disregarded, and the psychological response that we have to the response that many of the Bostonians and others outside of the city had to the cheering, the patriotism, the nationalism. And when we left off previously on Liberty Conspiracy, when we left off in the last hour, we were just talking a little bit about the royal we, the identification with the state, how now it's been sort of flipped around, where in the feudal days, the state was represented by the king, by the hierarchy under the king and the royals and things like that. And now the royal we has become all of us. Somehow it's this sort of anthropomorphic thing that the state is us. It's got its own personality, and it's a great state, and it's the democracy and freedom state and that sort of thing, which is kind of ironic. Little contradiction in terms. But what's interesting about it is that we just finished off talking about the use of crises. And there is a line that Hillary Clinton has been quoted. You can see the video on YouTube from sometime in 2009 where she said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And Rahm Emanuel, as Brett, you brought up, Rahm Emanuel has said the same thing. And we know that great books like Crisis and Leviathan by Robert Higgs have pointed out how the state will either manufacture a crisis, or due to state policies, a new crisis is created. Then the state will come through with a new solution, and people cling more to the state, and it ratchets up the size of the state. And so, Brett, what do you think? Should I mention this alarm bell ringing thing that I read just a few hours after the bombings in Boston?
Yeah, I think that's really important. I'll add to what you just said, though, as far as this. You're talking about the divine right of kings there, I think, a little bit.
Yes,
or exactly. The period of the royal we was also this term, the divine right of kings. Mm. And yeah, the state's always trying something new to justify their existence. So when it first popped up thousands of years ago, it was like, hey, look, folks, I'm kind of this magic guy who's a god. Yeah. And then when that didn't play anymore, as slowly over time society is becoming more and more enlightened and they're able to combat these claims a little bit more effectively,
yeah.
It says, all right, well, I'm not a god, but, there is a god, and I'm kind of like his hand here on earth, so he speaks to me. And I carry out his will, and then that didn't work. So it's like, okay, well, there's these clergy, and they know what God wants, and I consult with them, and then I carry out the will. Okay, fine, it's not God, it's the people. We do the people's will. And that seemed to work for a really good clip, especially in this country and in Europe for almost two centuries, and now it seems like we've really shifted to instead of any of these other things, the what ifs, the government by fear, and I think that goes right into what you're saying and right into where we're about to go.
That's a great point. I love that historical, the course of your historical analysis is right on, Brett. Okay, well, folks. Just after the bombing, occasionally I check out Alex Jones's website. I particularly like to look at what some of his researchers do about the DHS and the ATF. And they've been spot on a lot of those things. And a lot of the larger conspiracy things you've heard me mention, I don't discuss those things. I think the general trend is for government to try to increase its power. You don't have to have conspiracies behind it. And sometimes I'd rather devote my attention to educating people about free market economics and individual freedom so they can spread the word. But I saw a post on the Alex Jones website, which had been taken from a forum from some other website, and it was posted at 6:42 p.m. April 15th, just a few hours after the bombings in Boston occurred at 2:50. And this is what it said. Warning, laws being written to screw you. I work on a security commission, and I've just received word to start campaigning on a campaign where we've been working on that we've been working on for the past 2 months, and now it all makes sense. I'll keep it as short as I can. They're going to pin this event on a male, late teens to early 20s, and say he did it because he's unstable. They are going to find firearms and an NRA book in his home. Now, folks, you can, you know, take this for what it's worth. They're going to say he used reloading powder for the explosion, and that reloading powder shouldn't be for sale to the public. They're then going to say that because the powder and ammunition can be used for explosions, the number of rounds you can buy should be limited and taxed to help pay for these events. I can't do anything or I'll lose my job and possibly face criminal charges. Please don't let them get away with it. They won't find the suspect till later this week, and the raid is issued to occur on Friday. This was a staged event. The people hurt are real, but the event was planned. Don't let them hurt our rights. I'm at work, so I used a copy of a picture from another thread that doesn't really mean anything. Also, please don't mention me. It will seriously hurt me. Now, I don't know what website this was. It doesn't have any information. Brett, obviously, there's some things there that are very alarmist, and the only thing that I can get out of this, as you and I discussed off the air, is that this guy clearly knew that this Frank Lautenberg bill was in the works, because it was introduced shortly thereafter, like the day or 2 days after, to try to control black powder and reloading powder. And this is fascinating to me, and I, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist guy, but you know, whether it happens because the politicians plan the events or they happen to jump on these things, what do you think about this sort of thing?
Well, I mean, as far as the whole conspiracy, it's always compelling. I don't have any aversion to the – I mean, as far as I'm concerned, history is conspiracy. Politics is conspiracy. It's the narrative of both the left and the right as far as the pundits are concerned, whether it's Larry O'Donnell and Chris Matthews and Michael Moore saying that the right is conspiring against you and us, or the you know, people on the right like Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin saying Obama and you know, his coterie of academics and intellectuals and central planners is conspiring against good Americans like us. So conspiracy is everywhere, and it's not controversial in mainstream rhetoric.
Hold that thought. We got to go to our spots. We'll be right back with Brett Vinat. Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio, continuing our conversation, a conversation between me, your host, Gardner Goldsmith, and Brett Vinat of the School Sucks Project. Go to the website, check it out, see what they have to offer. I think you'll really like all the great podcasts he's done, the videos he's done. Brett is with me. Brett, thanks again for sticking around, buddy. You were in the midst of some thoughts, and maybe you might want to recap to the audience rather than me being the guy to recap. You just go ahead and dive right in. We're talking about the Boston Marathon bombings and so on.
Where exactly did we leave off? Man, this is quite the cluster.
Yeah, let's you know, we're talking about, you know, this conspiracy theory thing and a guy saying, you know, posting a few hours afterwards, everybody, and he was saying that they're going to try to get a guy on Friday and it's a setup. The people hurt were real, but there are forces behind this. They want to take away your right to be able to get powder for firearms, ammunition for reloading powder and stuff like that. And, you know, we had been speaking in the last hour about the trend of government always to try to gain more power. And
politicians saying never squander a good crisis. And whether they create the crises or not, these sorts of things, you know, your thoughts on this, Brett, and thoughts on, you know, you and I were discussing a little bit off the air about the Canada story and things like that, and how you assess the crises and the conspiracy theories and things like that. Because I think a lot of people will say, yeah, you know, they do try. They do things. They have had false flag operations. Look at Vietnam, which clearly Roosevelt knew about that. So, you know, your thoughts on that sort of thing and assessing it from the standpoint of a guy who tries to educate people about the same way I do, I think, about the general trends of human psyches and political political problems and how we try to break people out of that and get them free.
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, I think the idea that anybody is just laughing at and dismissing conspiracy theory at this point, I think that there's a context, and paranoia is not a healthy emotion, but people's concern, I think, is definitely well founded if they understand their history. And I was talking in the last segment about how much of history is conspiracy. And even if we just want to focus on the U.S. government in the last 50 years, there is a track record for this stuff. I mean, that Operation Northwoods document about staging terror attacks to, you know, build support for an invasion of Cuba, Operation Gladio to, make it look like communism was more of a threat in Europe. We're really about staging terror attacks. Operation Mockingbird that was revealed by the Church Committee hearings in the 1970s about the CIA's influence over the media and infiltration of what is now called the mainstream media. And people are being told one story, and you can get sucked into the talk radio narrative or the CNN narrative or the MSNBC narrative. But I think a lot of people who understand how government has been able to influence, infiltrate, and control the media, they understand that they're kind of overlaying and maybe an alternate version of what real reality actually is. So the suspicion is definitely well founded. Of course, the confusing thing about the Boston situation is there was just this influx of so much contradictory information, which is, you know, natural. As a news story breaks, there's going to be conflicting reports initially. This is actually something that conspiracy theorists, often latch onto erroneously, where they say, well, look what they said in the first few hours, as if information was more reliable then.
Yes.
And I think that can often lead people down the wrong path as far as trying to construct the actual narrative of facts related to a certain event. So, I think Alex Jones is trying to scoop, other people who are in the same business as him. He's kind of built this reputation as being first to this stuff. The case with InfoWars might be, you know, they throw up as much stuff as they can. And, you know, maybe some of those stories, as they become, implausible when more information comes to people's attention, maybe they disappear off the InfoWars page. But, you know, I think the goal is to be first and to be as right as we can as many times as possible, which can't lead to an 100% success rate. But, you know, Alex Jones is in that business, just as CNN, MSNBC, and Fox are in a business where they're trying to scoop each other and get to a story first. And sometimes those stories are wrong. So I think it's natural that there would be a lot of initial confusion about what's going on. But I was also suspicious, and as I mentioned, suspicion is well-founded, about it almost seemed like a deliberate effort to create confusion.
Yes.
And I've accused people, kind of, or not accused people, but asked questions about people like Alex Jones in the past. Sometimes he seems to me like he's part of that effort. I think the mainstream media and the alternative media or more conspiracy-oriented media, they can't do things perfectly. I don't think the mainstream media has the best of intentions. I think they really are banking on paranoia and fear. And I think Alex Jones is too, to a lesser extent. But I think he has better intentions than, say, CNN, MSNBC, or Fox.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's interesting, just as far as my own personal assessment of myself goes, my self-assessment, when I see these stories and I see other stories, and I know that perhaps as we start up in the next segment, Brett, I want to talk about this Canadian story, this mm-hmm. recent breaking story. And you have some thoughts on this. You've been doing some reading on it, too. And, you know, it's confusing. I won't say confusing, but it requires a certain amount of effort to say, now, wait a minute. This happens at just this particular time when X, Y, or Z is being prepared, a piece of legislation. Is it coincidental, or is there a nefarious plot? Now, Alex Jones would say it's a nefarious plot. The Rockefellers, the great bankers, the corporations that run this country, they're the ones that are setting this up. They're setting up the false flag operations, and his narrative sometimes starts to evolve as they get more information, and he starts to... But there are times when you say, man, I myself, you know, to be redundant, I see a story that is a breaking story, and I'm saying to myself, wow, that was an uncanny piece of timing, you know? And and you say to yourself, so how do I assess this never let a good crisis go to waste? And,
yeah.
And we know that they have created crises. I mean, that if for example, if they are willing to torture people in MKUltra, if they are willing to allow certain people to have syphilis and not get treatment, if they are willing to give certain people cancer cells, if they are willing to do these things to people, if they are willing to kill foreigners abroad, to be redundant again, if they're willing to kill foreigners and then cover up stuff and then prosecute people who reveal that a wedding party was bombed, then are they capable of allowing killers to blow up bombs on the streets of Boston?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's certainly a possibility, and there's also a track record of kind of keeping a bullpen of these sketchy characters.
Hold that thought, all right, Brett?
Yep.
All right, we'll be back. Brett will continue on the sketchy characters. Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thanks very much for finding us here. And you can also find us at libertyconspiracy.com, because freedom is out of fashion nowadays. Our podcast, we've done 614 of them so far. I've done some. Glenn Jacobs has done some. Mark Canny has done some. An old girlfriend of mine, great girl named Courtney, did one. Ferb of the Freedom Book Club has done some. We have had separate people do them. We've had guests, and you can find them at Podomatic, at iTunes, and at the Liberty Conspiracy website. LG Grande here with you, and one of the men who has been involved with numerous Liberty Conspiracy podcasts, some of the best, some of the greatest podcasts we have ever done, is here with us once more, Brett Vinod, who was just in the middle of talking to us a little bit about some thoughts. And you know what's interesting, Brett, with everybody, we talk to each other off the air, so you say to yourself, wait, where were we when we were talking? Because now we've spoken about a bunch of other things, but
right.
We're talking about conspiracy theories and people like Alex Jones, and seeing something that is posted shortly after the Boston Marathon attacks that says it was a staged event, and looking at some of the things that we've seen in history from the United States government, and you can't really put it past them to possibly either directly kill people or to not warn people on the streets of Boylston Street, in particular in Boston. So, Brett, we'll sort of pick up from there, and then maybe we'll talk about some of the news stories that we're hearing and what we think about those, like the story out of Canada.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the last phrase I uttered was bullpen of sketchy characters. And what I mean by that, bullpen, folks, if you're not a baseball fan, is where the relief pitchers sit when they are called in when things get bad. So what I'm picturing here is that when things get bad for government, people kind of lose faith in the idea of an emerging security state. And, you know, they return to life as it was pre-9/11. And there has been evidence that the FBI, and this goes all the way back to 1993, where there's a lot of evidence that the FBI was supposedly handling the bombers of the 1993 World Trade Center. They were using, as an intermediary, this Egyptian named Ahmad Salem. If you want to Google Salem, spelled like Salem, the city, S-A-L-E-M,
yeah.
FBI, WTC, you can find audio that he recorded of himself talking to the FBI, saying, look, you know, I built the bomb. These guys have a real bomb. Interesting, and there's a lot of interpretations of that, but it has shown that there has been a relationship between the FBI and these very sketchy characters. It is totally conceivable that they could be used, they could be entrapped. This would be very useful in justifying the security state,
yep,
by, you know, giving somebody explosives, sending them off to do something, and then showing up and arresting them. And saying, look what we did. We foiled another plot. They were running rampant with this. Not maybe that exact scenario, but arresting people for supposed terror plots. A couple of guys, because they made a video of themselves at Disney World saying that they were casing it for an attack. This,
yes,
was right after 9/11. But this handling of Islamic fundamentalists, so-called, goes all the way back to the 90s. The other thing, too, is that you know, we often overlook the fact that there are a lot of people out there who do buy into this Islamist idea of America is evil,
yeah,
because we are corrupted by individualism, if you can believe such a thing,
yeah,
that we're selfish and self-absorbed and we're infidels. And, you know, these movements were real. They originated in Egypt 5-6 decades ago.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, these people are nuts, for lack of a better word. And it got to a point, I think, in the 80s when bin Laden was coming up, that they were just these different sects of Islamic fundamentalists were killing each other because the other sect wasn't radical enough,
yeah,
wasn't pure enough.
Yes.
And in the end, all that was left was the most violent. Now, these are groups that could also be useful to, say, the CIA or the U.S. empire around the world if they needed to destabilize a certain region where there was an enemy, say, Afghanistan in the 1980s, controlled by the Soviets, the Mujahideen. So the relationship between United States intelligence and counterintelligence and these more radical and dangerous fundamentalist types is very real. It's very long lasting, and it's certainly not something that is being discussed. Obviously, it has come out that the FBI has talked to the older brother in the two terror bombing suspects in the Boston thing. I think that people just being immediately dismissive of the idea that there's more to this story is short-sighted. And people, I think, people can be kind of fundamentalists in their skepticism, too,
yeah,
where they immediately have to take the hard skeptic position and they don't stay open-minded to the possibilities. It doesn't mean you have to immediately, obviously, on the other hand, go to, you know, wherever Alex Jones is on this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
go ahead, Gar.
Well, I agree with you 100%, Brett. And this is some of these are I don't know how you feel about it, but to me it's a sort of a internal wrestling position where I constantly try to focus and say, okay, look, you know, here is information. Let me investigate this. I'm so glad you brought up the, you know, what started 50 years ago with an Egyptian cleric and grew into radical Islamic fundamentalism. And yet, the CIA was in touch with a lot of these people through the years. You know, I have a friend who went down into Pakistan during the 1980s when we were in college and traveled from Pakistan into Afghanistan when the Soviets were there, and he met with the Mujahideen. And he did it because the dean of our school, a man named Joachim Matra, was a former East German who had defected. He was the dean of the College of Communication at Boston University, and he had a lot of CIA ties. So clearly the CIA got my friend into that area, got him through the Khyber Pass and into Afghanistan so that he could report on what the Northern Alliance Mujahideen guys were doing. At that time, the U.S. CIA was supplying them with Stinger missiles so they could fight the Soviets. And yeah, so we know how long, and that was just, that's just one facet, right? So now we look at this story out of Canada, and I wrestle with it, and I'd love to get your thoughts on how you wrestle with it, about how at this particular time in the United States, all of a sudden they have another story about two arrested in Canada planned to attack a train. Out of Ottawa comes that story. It's been reported on by the New York Times and a lot of other folks. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, evidently in association with the FBI, have arrested two people that they said were getting direction and guidance from Al-Qaeda elements living in Iran. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, boy. Well, that covers everything, even through in Iran.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah,
that's
really
the triple play.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, you asked me to, you sent me an article and I wanted to do a little more research, so I just Googled Canadian terror.
Yeah.
And one of the first hits under news was from CBC News, which is I think a Canadian like big network television station. Mm-hmm. Title of this piece is Government Harries Debate on Anti-Terrorism Bill. And I'm like, you know, gosh, the government is just like making it harder for me every day to be a conspiracy skeptic.
Yeah.
Again, we have this perfect timing. The connection or the link to this arrest that was just made over the suspicion of this train bombing. The story with this is that Canada, I guess, passed some legislation similar to the USA Patriot Act. After September 11th, some of the more controversial clauses sunsetted in 2007. So the conservatives in the Canadian Parliament are trying to re-up some of the more civil liberties smashing pieces of the bill.
Hmm. Interesting. And again, we say to ourselves, is it just coincidental timing? Is it the sort of thing that, as we've seen in every instance in the United States where they have, the federal government has claimed credit for stopping a terror attack, it was an entrapment situation, or is there something else? And I hear the music for our sponsors to come in and tell folks about what they do. So I'll leave that question out there. And Brett and I will continue chatting off the air, and then we'll come back and talk to you guys on the air at Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. Be right back. LG Grande, Brett Vinat. Remember, School Sucks Project, everybody. It's good stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Sometimes I try to do things, it just doesn't work out. It doesn't matter, I'll probably get hit by a car anyway.
Hey, welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and I hope you're having a great night, and I hope you're enjoying our website. You know, put the porn aside, check out Liberty Conspiracy. It's cool. I've thought many times about, you know, putting pictures up of like really hot girls or whatever. Or if you make a video, like you take like one frame of a really hot girl and you make that like the video on YouTube. So like all the young guys will click on it like, oh, girl in a bikini. And then you start, you know, and then it turns into like subjective marginal utility theory and economics. It's like, what? That's the way to do it, you know. Anyway, welcome back. Brett Vinat's with me from School Sucks Project. And Brett, thank you very much, man. And you've got your new video, folks. You got to check it out. It's this dangerous libertarian thing. Tell them about the title and give them a little recap of your thoughts on that, Brett.
Sure. Spoiler alert. Okay. This is it's called Why Libertarianism is So Dangerous. It's from School Sucks Podcast, episode 41, which I believe was recorded sometime in 2010. It kind of plays out the worst case scenario of a government disappearing overnight, which is not something that I think most libertarians or liberty minded people are really in favor of. They recognize that it's a gradual evolution that has many elements to it.
Yeah.
But if all the worst things happened, we would probably be led back to a situation over time that is very similar to the situation we live in currently. The reason why I say that is like people just picture like mayhem in the streets, and it might be like that at first, but as people become more entrenched and latch on to power, and that becomes, you know, generational or however it plays out in the society, people develop better maintenance strategies to hold that power.
Yeah.
So violent people realize they can't just kill everyone they want to prey on, because then those people can't be used as resources.
Right.
So if you, I mean, today, for most people, the world that we live in, or as Americans, doesn't really seem that terrible. But that's the result of careful scientific human management strategies that resulted from a long, long process of trial and error, mm-hmm. and state models that had a more finite life because people got fed up with the controls and fed up with the very visible, very palpable tyranny, and they would eventually rebel. So how do we create a state, I guess, that was the question that was eventually asked by the people in power. How do we create a structure that is rebellion-proof? Mm-hmm. And that involves education. That obviously involves basically an unbeatable defense of the state.
Yes.
Like, you know, I do obviously support people's liberty to protect themselves with firearms, but the idea that government is going to take our guns and, you know, then do this, this, and this, like happened in Cambodia and a bunch of other police states, U.S. government has gotten to a point where they don't need to take your guns. They can take you on with your guns. They can take you on psychologically. They can take you on economically. So this is a very, you know, all-encompassing, comprehensive arsenal that they've built that results in a soft tyranny that, for people who are not aware of some of the stuff that we discuss on my show or Gardner's show, mm-hmm. Just seems like freedom. Because yes. The government also spent 15,000 hours with you as a child telling you that asking permission to talk and go to the bathroom was freedom. You know, society-wide.
Yeah.
And so it's deep and dark, and I hope people will check out the video, and I hope it will be, you know, at least a sort of rallying cry for the choir or something that's kind of startling and jarring for non-libertarians and will lead to them doing more research.
Oh, it's excellent, and it's just the right length of time. And you even have music. Now, you know what? I'm not even going to mention it. I'm not going to say anything. People just watch it. It's terrific. It's the School Sucks podcast. Look for it on YouTube, and you'll find the video, which I think is just exceptional, and it's why libertarianism is so dangerous. Now, hopefully we're not going to be the ones rounded up someday, Brett. I don't want anybody rounded up by the government.
Right, right.
But, you know, I know we don't even need to get into people that we know who are probably being watched or people have tried to the FBI has already tried to infiltrate the Free State Project twice. Let's continue talking a little bit about what we were discussing, you know, the government either screwing up or false flag operations and our own feelings as we try to assess these things within the context of seeing the reactions of folks embracing the state for their supposed security.
Sure. And what's the best way to do that? We've been many, many places tonight.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I just encourage people to keep their guard up as new information comes in. And I think being skeptical of the official story is very healthy. But people should be careful about, you know, jumping into any rabbit hole that is opened up in front of them. An example would be, you know, drills. There seems to be a connection between government running drills and then some kind of catastrophic terror event taking place. Mm. And there are examples of this. But this was, the first thing that Alex Jones latched onto. But the truth is that the government in Boston is very vigilant. Like I said, an hour and a half ago, they like being the government. Mm-hmm. They like doing government-y things.
Yeah.
And, even nationwide, the Boston Marathon is a very big event, and it is a good opportunity for, teams who are designated to deal with those kinds of situations, to practice those kinds of situations. So it is not at all abnormal that they would be doing some kind of drill at the Boston Marathon. Now, is that suspicious? Of course it's suspicious, but it doesn't prove anything. So, you know, going back to people, you know, cowering at the feet of the state. We don't want at the feet of libertarians. Like, I think sometimes, especially from what I see from some of these Facebook memes, there's a lot of libertarians who are waiting for this I told you so moment where all these statists just come in and say, oh, you were right all along. Tell us what we should think and do. And I'm not saying that's everybody. I'm not saying it's a conscious thought, but there seems to be evidence that, and I know that feeling because I've kind of been there myself with some of the statist types that I know that, oh, when this happens, they'll say, Brett, you were right. That moment is never coming for most people.
No,
and I think, you know, through you know, alternative media through peaceful and productive conversation and through finding new exciting ways to reach out to more people, over time, our best hope is to take from the center of society the state, this grand authority, and replace it, you know, the grand authority as the truth, and replace the truth as the grand authority. And I think that, you know, people like Gardner have done great work. Stefan Molyneux has done great work. Wes Bertrand has done great work. And there's so many people, more than I can name, that have really moved this discussion forward in a meaningful and powerful way. But when something terrible happens, if we had something that people could go to instead of the state, you know, like the reason – peace.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with having a sense of community, you know, where individuals are first, but people need each other. Like, all of those things are, that's fine with me. But to move those to be the big ideas and the really meaningful and powerful forces in society, I think is a lot of what we're working towards here.
Boy, I really like the way you say that, Brett. And it comes to mind as I'm sitting here listening to you say that you know, my personal experience is that at times I watch these things and I'll feel very downhearted and dejected that I feel as if I'm not making any progress. And yet I actually will then get together with Free State Project members and see the number of people who are attracted to these ideas and whether they have been, you know, you've met people and I've met people who have said, hey, you know, you brought me over to this way of thinking, to really trying to look at principles and a moral way of dealing with my neighbor and adhering to things like the golden rule and individual freedom. And I say, wow, you know, that makes me feel good. So it's an interesting experience to sort of feel as if you are marginalized in a world where pop media trends towards the center, politically of the state, where much of the populace often will follow that or lead it, or it's a sort of symbiotic thing. But I think, you know, you've made great strides, and hopefully I've done okay. And you don't really think about it sometimes when you're sort of, you know, going on your computer and writing things up and everything. But there are a lot of other people who are fighting for the same things. And then you find each other, or maybe somebody has influenced someone, and then they come to you and say, hey, you know, I heard this. And then you realize, you know what, this fight is a good fight. It's a good thing, you know.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. Well put.
Well, listen, I know we're going to be coming up to the end of our 2 hours together, and I just want to personally thank you. And, folks, our conversations off the air have been really great, too, and I've appreciated that a lot. And it actually rekindles my energy, Brett, because, you know, I look at the way that you approach things at the School Sucks Project, and I think, yeah, you know, and, folks, if you haven't heard these things, check them out. And it makes me, you know, want to redouble my efforts to do a good job for freedom. So there you go.
Well, thanks. And people, don't forget, Gardner was a big influence on me back in the day, too. So it's reciprocal, you know.
Thanks, man. All right, folks, thank you very much for listening. Be seeing you.
Okay, everybody, let's continue with our previews of the AV Club bonus content. You can sign up for the AV Club at schoolsucksproject.com/AV, and this is a commitment to support the show on a monthly basis. It is very, very helpful, and I really, really need, like, a number. I've looked at the books. Need, like, 100 more people who can do this. And there's certainly plenty listening, so I hope that if you have six extra dollars a month, you will consider doing this. Even forget the extra content. I don't expect anyone to be able to listen to all of this. Most importantly, it guarantees that this show can continue and continue to grow, and I can invest something like 15 or 20 hours in a video project to reach a few tens of thousands of people and put the School Sucks name to new ears and new minds. So if you support that's really why I hope people will sign up, not to get access to a couple hundred hours of stuff. But next section is called Unreleased Live Shows, and this is from a post called Bonus Show, Kevin Smith's Red State, Nonviolent Communication, and Rand Paul. And this show, it just meandered a little too much to be a podcast, so I left it unedited and unreleased. And I'm not quite sure what we're talking about here. I know I have to warn you about an F word. Okay, here you go.
And what people were commenting on is like, don't forget, this is the guy who was against the Civil Rights Act. You know, but when you involve government in any situation, just going back to the real kind of communication that we need to solve problems, I mean, you're just cheating. Just cheating. It's like having a disagreement with someone and saying, look, I will fucking kill you if you don't agree with me. I will lock you in a cage and shoot at you and take your stuff if you don't agree with me. Imagine trying to diffuse any real life situation by threatening people. So people look at things like the Civil Rights Act as this great achievement, but it didn't really... Yeah,
all it is another drone.
And all it is another resentment. All it is another resentment, because it did nothing to change racism.
It made it worse, for sure.
I really think it did. And I think it was such... It was so disrespectful to a lot of those people who... You know, that should be... Like, for people who care about history, like, that should be a memory of what Black people had to go through in this country. Mm-hmm. And then they say, okay, well, now there's civil rights laws, and now there's this thing called affirmative action. So let's lift up the carpet and sweep all that shit underneath it. And now people, all they have to hear is like, oh, yeah, Black people used to be treated badly. And then the government solved that problem. Like every goddamn chapter in every public school history book tries to teach. And that really cheats people, I think. And it really doesn't solve a problem. Because, I mean,
not only does it not solve the problem, but it robs people of the ability to solve the problem.
Yeah. Absolutely. In an authentic win-win kind of way.
Right.
Right? Because, I mean, I guess a world that doesn't have racism in it is certainly a win for everybody, but that's not what laws do.
No, the funny thing is most of the people that I have ever had a discussion with this about, I don't, because it always comes up, you know, because Ron Paul opposed the Civil Rights Act.
Sure, yeah.
And most people have no idea what that means. They take it to mean that Ron Paul just hates Black people.
Yeah.
Which he may or may not. I don't even really know. It's kind of unclear.
I know he hates Bruno.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but the thing is, they're like, oh, well, without the Civil Rights Act, we'd be right back to segregation. Like, no, because the fact of the matter is Ron Paul was opposed to segregation, but he also didn't support making it illegal. And we're like, oh, without Civil Rights Act, we'd be, you know, white people would be, white business owners would be allowed to ban Blacks from their stores. Like, you do realize that, you know, segregation didn't just happen. And then the civil rights laws came in and saved us from it. Like, in most of the places where there was segregation, it was required by law, by state law. In 33 different states at some point had legally required segregation of Black and white.
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
People have no idea that that's the case.
Right.
They think that, you know, segregation came about because of racists in the free market. Like, why would any, like, serious free market business owner, like, opt to leave, like, ban half of the population from his business? It doesn't even make sense. Yeah.
If you have a lunch counter and a bus company,
yeah,
it's not just like any half. You know, obviously, especially like Black people in the South, you know, weren't like the vice presidents of banks and CEOs in the 1950s in this country. I mean, that's sad, but it's a fact. You know, and those are the people who were eating at diners, and those were the people, because that was their income bracket. They were eating at diners. They were riding the bus. So like. Could your hatred as a business owner for people be so powerful that you want to ban them from your establishment?
It's hard enough to not do business with people that you don't like for a good reason, let alone people that you don't like for stupid reasons.
I saw this documentary that Alexandria Pelosi, who is, yes, the daughter of Nancy Pelosi, produced about Right America, it was called, Feeling Wrong. And it was about the election between McCain and Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And
I saw that one.
She goes and she talks to these people down south, and they're like, who are you voting for? And they're like, are you kidding me? McCain. And they're like, you know, some of them are just really so retarded that they're like, yeah, I'm not voting for a nigger. You know, that's, I mean, that's that.
Yeah, that was a quote, by the way, from a subject of the documentary.
But what you see in a lot of those people is that they believe these things, but they know, not that I'm ever like advocating shaming people, even though I have kind of made a podcast out of doing it occasionally. Sure. But you can see that they believe these things. Maybe they're just so ingrained. Maybe it was how they were raised. Maybe it's where they lived. But a lot of the people that she interviewed in that film, they express their racism, but they almost seem ashamed of it, or like they're embarrassed by it.
Right.
You know, like you might talk to people and be like, oh, I'm a Catholic. Ugh. You know? Like, I mean, that's what it's like in my family.
Yeah.
You know, my mom is not religious and my uncle's not religious, but they're like, we're Catholic.
I was raised Catholic, but I don't really. I was raised racist, but I don't really go to the Klan meetings anymore.
but it was kind of, it kind of reminded me of that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Where
it's just part of the fabric of life.
This is what I am.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't even really have any strong feelings about it, but that's just how it is.
Or we see, I think we see that a lot in like, you know, entertainment and comedy. Like, oh, I'm a Jew.
Oi, I'm a Jew.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's like, I am what I am. And I felt like that's what it was. Like, you know, and maybe that comes back to what we were talking about a little bit with Red State, like the horror that it's so irrational and so unbelievable maybe to people like us. But to say that, like, geez, it's either going to be John McCain or a black guy. What has happened to this world? You know, but not even that. Yeah, obviously the things with gays, with the exploitation of sexuality, like in the mainstream media, in television commercials, in children's programming. I think I said a Middle Ages attitude before, but to have like a 1950s worldview and living in 2013. And to take this back to the nonviolent communication thing, I think it's so easy. And that was one of the things that I found particularly moving about this movie as well, to just be like, dummies, you know, religious extremists and ATF agents, just like thugs and dummies.
But they made reference in the movies, like what he's preaching now is what his father preached before him and his grandfather. So we're looking at in that church congregation, there were three generations. And they're five generations deep into this sort of fire and brimstone teaching that the modern world is, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah and it's all going to burn. They're five generations into it. Can you imagine how deep that is in your psyche at that point? Like, they're very insular. Right? I don't even know how they find spouses for their kids. Where do those people come from?
Yeah, that's true.
Must be people who walk up to them at protests and just be like, hey, man, I love what you guys are doing. I'm going to marry your daughter.
Well, you could see in the movie that their portrayal, they were weak. They were the weak ones.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the wife who was his daughter, the cult leader's daughter, was basically talking to her husband like a child.
So it was almost
like he had some kind of deficiency that wasn't really explicated, but you could tell, like,
well, there was that one guy who had kind of a weird shaped head, like something wrong with him.